Welcome back to Queer Christian Family Values Podcast, QCFV. My name is Alex Bursnell, your host, and today's episode is actually a different one than what we've been dropping. We have had Paul's Inclusion Ministry going for a few series episodes now, but due to COVID, it's caused a little bit of a disruption in our recording process. And so instead of you guys going weeks without some sort of a podcast episode, we thought we would upload this episode, Mormonism. That way you get something out of it. This episode was actually intended to come out after the Paul's Inclusion Ministry series had ended, but due to COVID and everything that has been unexpected, we wanted to give you all something to help you with the break and the pause of this process. So without further ado, let's go ahead and hear from Kit, who is our guest today.
Hello, my name is Kit. I am a 22-year-old non-binary person. I am asexual, and I am also a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the Mormon Church.
Cool. That works. That allows our listeners to understand kind of a little bit of background that you actually do have a platform to talk about Mormonism, whereas me, who grew up Catholic and then left the church, and then now I go to a Pentecostal church / non-denominational, like I don't really have a lot of background on Mormonism. So at the start of our discussion, we talked about the YouTube video that I did, which was back in the day, and I was on this kick of trying to do kind of an introduction, or not introduction, more of a, I guess, history of different faiths and denominations and what that means and what they were about. And I found a book, and I should have been more prepared, but I cannot remember the name of the book, but it was a... if you're familiar with LibreVox, it's like the free open source books that are no longer in like copyright or whatever.
Yeah, I'm familiar with LibreVox.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So I listened to that, and it was basically trying to tell the history of Mormonism. And I thought, oh, this is great. We can talk about it. And turns out that it was like 99% wrong.
There was parts of it that were correct, and I actually did a little bit of research on that book, and it was actually written by someone who was a member for a long time. Mm-hmm. But there was like little pieces that weren't exactly quite right, and I don't know why exactly they weren't right, but considering it was written by someone who was a member when they were alive, there was some parts that I think could definitely have been cleared up better or something like that.
Yeah, I think especially for somebody who has no experience with it coming in, and if some, like for instance with Catholicism, if somebody who had no experience with Catholicism came in, they'll see that we, well, I say we, I don't really practice anymore, but when growing up, there would be a lot of statues of saints and stuff around the church, and people thought that Catholics prayed to these statues. And it's like, no, think of it more of like you've got a photo of a deceased family member. You're not praying or worshiping them. You're just, hey, they're a family member and they mean a lot to us, so we want to have an image representing that family member.
You're just honoring them.
Yeah, honoring, yes. And that's something from an outsider's perspective that's just really weird. And unless you are in it, and it's not the same, but if you try to explain it to somebody that isn't Catholic, then it can sometimes come off differently because, I mean, you've got your entire life that you grew up in, it's just normal to you, whereas somebody looking inward, they're like, that's still really weird. So I kind of feel in a sense of Mormonism, it's we'll get into it, but the aspects of the discs or plates, that's the thing that just is very confusing to me, I think. So I guess we can just start with like how it all started, like what's the history behind it, and if you want to talk about it and I can ask questions and then kind of go from there.
All right. So so really it begins with the New Testament. Mm-hmm. And like you said in your video, as a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we do believe in the Bible, and so the belief that we have is that after all of the apostles were either killed or banished or exiled, mm-hmm. The authority to act as the Savior was taken away from the earth because there wasn't really anyone worthy to hold that power.
Okay.
And so, not to say that there weren't other people that were inspired by the power of God, such as like Martin Luther and John Calvin and stuff, the Reformers, but they didn't have the proper authority as given from God. And so in your video, you mentioned Joseph Smith, mm-hmm. and he was a young man living in New York, in the state of New York. And there was, as you said, kind of a religious, battle of opinions, I guess.
What was it between like the Methodists and...
It was between all sorts of denominations. Everybody. Like, they were all interpreting the Bible in different ways and trying to figure out who was right. And it was definitely in that region of the United States. It was 1819. Mm-hmm. Joseph Smith was reading in the Bible, and he came across a verse that really spoke to him. Let me see if I can find it. Okay, I'll just read from it. So I'm just reading from the King James Version.
Okay.
If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. And that's James chapter 1, verse 5.
Okay.
And so Joseph Smith read that verse, and it spoke really powerfully to him. The Holy Spirit just spoke to him powerfully, saying that he needed to act on that. And so in 1820... he went into a grove of trees near his home and began to pray, asking and just seeking an answer in faith, hoping that he would get an answer to which church was true, because he was just very confused about how the same passage of scripture could be interpreted so differently.
Yeah.
And so... as an answer to that prayer, God the Father and Jesus Christ actually appeared to him in vision and God the Father addressed him by name and said, Joseph, this is my beloved son, and I hear him. Mm-hmm. And Jesus spoke directly to Joseph Smith and explained to him that none of the churches that were on the earth at the time had the full truth, and none of them had the full authority be the same church that Christ had set up while he was on the earth. And Joseph Smith was also told that the truth would be of things would be made known unto him at a later time. And then a few years later, Joseph Smith was So Joseph Smith was a farmer, like you said in your video, and and I've actually been to a replica of his family's farm in New York.
Cool.
And so I've actually been to that grove of trees, and so a few years after the vision from God the Father and Jesus Christ, he had another vision of an angel who in that vision he was told that there was a work for him to do, and eventually and so the person who visited Joseph Smith was a person from ancient America, who was able to eventually give Joseph Smith the golden plates to translate into the Book of Mormon, which is another record and that is used as scripture for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and is about and it's an ancient record kept by prophets that lived in the Americas and takes place from about 600 BC starting in Jerusalem until about AD 421, when the last person that is a descendant of those first people to come to the Americas from that time period, and when that last person, who was the person who Joseph Smith saw in vision, and, buried the record in a hill that was nearby Joseph Smith's home.
Okay. So I guess my question with that is, like, you mentioned that the, I'm looking at my notes, you mentioned that the discs came as, it was a record of a family that, well, prophets that lived in the Americas before Joseph Smith. Yes. And was that from, in the notes I have that there were, was a family that actually left Jerusalem and traveled to the Americas, and that they were kind of like the first, what, prophets or family?
Yes. So the family, the patriarch of the family, his name was Lehi, and he was a prophet living in Jerusalem.
Okay.
In the right around the reign of King Zedekiah, which is referenced in I don't remember where it's referenced in the Bible, but during King Zedekiah's reign in 600 BC, Lehi was a prophet of God, as well as with Jeremiah about the same time as that. And so God told Lehi to leave with his family into the wilderness, and eventually they got to a safe spot, but God told them that it wasn't their promised land of sorts. And so one of Lehi's sons, who's named Nephi, built a ship, and everybody got on board the ship with supplies for seeds and animals and such, and they sailed over to what is believed to be near southern Mexico. And then not too long after that, Lehi passed away, and Nephi became a prophet, but his older brothers, Laman and I don't remember the other one off the top of my head.
I think you said Nephi? Nephi?
That's Nephi.
Okay.
And so Nephi's older brother, Laman, was very against the teachings of the Lord, and so they split off, and their own families kind of didn't really disagree. Their descendants didn't really agree either. So they were divided amongst themselves, And there was definitely a lot of wars in between in the groups, but
cool. So like, I guess when, so this is like gonna go on to more of completely misunderstood parts of Mormonism, because there's a lot of people that talk about so when I first came back to the Christian faith after I left Catholicism, it was years, and then I came back to the Christian faith. Well, I had questions about, you know, different denominations, because there are so many different Christian denominations, which I think that's probably something that Joseph Smith saw, is like they're breaking off from each other, and it's chaos to some degree. And so I asked questions about, okay, well, what does this denomination have that this denomination doesn't believe? And, you know, what are the differences? And somebody told me that Mormonism believes, this is not trying to offend, this is just literally, this is what I've heard, believes in aliens. Like, I don't even know where that came from. I've never
heard such a thing myself about that, actually.
I've heard this more than once, and I don't know where it's coming from. I think the fact of the plates has something to do with it, in the sense of saying that God and Jesus came. I don't know. But they're saying, yeah, they believe that if once you die, you somehow become a god of your own universe and all
that is part of the belief system.
Okay.
Actually,
would you want to go into that a little bit?
So basically the idea of it is that after death, mm-hmm. There is a sort of a state of in between. So there is an in-between state, mm-hmm. which is kind of like the traditional idea of heaven and hell.
In Catholicism, there's my brain just died. Good Lord. Oh my goodness, my brain. it's basically, if you die and before you go to hell or heaven, it's kind of a state of that in between that. Oh my goodness, I'm gonna have all the Catholics in the comments say, "How dare you?" Is that kind of like, it's like this? You're not quite in hell, not quite in heaven.
Well, not exactly. So that's mostly just like a place for those who weren't so the ones that are in the traditional idea of hell are able to be taught the truth, mm-hmm. by like living a good life, you're able to enter the state of a little bit of a state of rest.
Yeah,
but you're able to teach those who weren't able to get the truth, or what we believe to be the truth at least. And so, and then after that, with the end of times and the apocalypse and all that, mm-hmm. Everybody will be relieved from that state and will be able to enter into a degree of glory based off of their, what they were like on Earth, and how they acted and like Christ and such. And I'm not too familiar with like all of the information that.
That's fine.
Even though I've been a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints my whole life, I still have a lot that I could learn.
I think that's everybody.
But there is sort of like the degrees of glory, which are like more of a final final judgment of sorts, I guess. And those found to be in the highest degree of glory are believed to be able to become gods and create their own worlds, although of course I have no complete evidence of that.
Cool. Okay, so it almost sounds, maybe not worlds, maybe, well, I mean, you can call it worlds, but it almost sounds like create your own heavens in a sense. Or is it?
Maybe. I'm really not sure.
And I figured out the word that I was looking for. It's purgatory. Yeah, which that sounds different. So like when you said about when people pass away, is it almost like they're in like a state of sleep? Is that what?
It's kind of like a limbo sort of state. That's okay. Like their body is dead, but their spirit is alive.
Okay. Do you believe, well, I don't know if the church believes this or not, like, do they have a sense of consciousness? Is it just darkness, or is it just kind of dreamlike? I mean, I guess nobody really knows for sure.
Yeah, no one really knows for sure. I personally think that there is definitely like a consciousness, because I've sometimes felt the influence, like had a really strong feeling of like my great-great-grandpa is watching over me or something like that. Sort of like a guardian angel of sorts, but it's not exactly that. It's just like a calming presence of just like, you know, this person
is with you,
is helping me feel better about what's going on or something like that.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. There's some denominations that believe that people cannot come back and comfort their loved ones and stuff like that, but I tend to believe that they can, because in the Bible, it talks about humans being like angels, you know, in the fact of they have quite a bit of authority, because, I mean, with the spirit and everything, it is God's breathed life into you, or at least that's what we believe. And I personally think that a person's spirit has strength to come back and be with a person, or not necessarily be an angel to the person, but at least have that connection to them, look out for them, and kind of keep tabs on them. Yeah. A little bit. So
yeah, I definitely believe that.
Yeah,
same sort of thing.
Cool. So basically what you're saying is Mormonism is not too different from regular Christianity in the fact of your basis always will come from the Bible. You guys will always hold the Bible to its high authority. It's just you have evidence that there is a continuation of that book.
Yeah, so the main thing is that, and being a Mormon, it's the belief that and we have the same sort of organization of the church as Jesus Christ organized when he was on the earth, and then some. So
yeah,
we have additional insight, like as I said in the notes, the other sheep that are mentioned in the book of Saint John are the people in the Americas, and there's like we're just like adding to it's just adding to the information that's already there in the Bible.
Okay. No, I can understand that. Yeah, I'm looking at your notes. I think you said John chapter 10 verse 16 where he talks about the other sheep.
Yeah,
I think some people say, well, that they're just talking about the Gentiles, but I mean, well, technically Mormonism is Gentiles in a sense. I mean, everybody is. So, so I mean, I can see where that's coming from. And I think your notes said the record ends in about AD 421.
Yes.
And that was the last person found worthy to hold the record that was buried in the hill.
Yeah. And that record became the Book of Mormon.
Okay. So like, was it in another language? So you mentioned about decoding something. Was the discs, were they a different language or?
Yeah. So the golden plates were a grouping of the records that were kept by the ancient people, mostly by the ancient prophets, starting with Lehi from 600 BC to AD 421. And they were all compiled by a man whose name was Mormon, which is where the nickname of Mormons comes from. And so he compiled those all together throughout his life because they had been recorded all throughout about 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. And he was the one who compiled them all together scripture, and like, and he had them, he transcribed all of them into a form of an ancient form of Egyptian.
Okay.
And so they were like individual metal plates with engravings on them,
like hieroglyphics and stuff.
Not quite hieroglyphics, but sort of there.
More symbols and
more just like an ancient script system that has been revealed to be similar to ancient Egyptian. That wasn't like, it was more common, more commonly used than hieroglyphics.
Okay,
like
that makes
sense. The common scribe back then would use.
Okay, cool.
And so Joseph Smith was able to find those through divine in guidance, and he was given the power from God to translate them into English. And since being translated into English, it's also been translated into dozens of other languages.
Yeah, right. So I guess my next question is, you mentioned about how the record ends in AD 421. So that means that they were there a lot longer than that. So essentially they were there before, like, you know, the whole Christopher Columbus thing. They were there. They were the first non-Native American people to go over.
Well, many people believe that one of the groups of people that broke away from Lehi's family are ancestors to the modern day Native Americans.
Oh, okay. That would make sense, because people that came from Jerusalem were Middle Eastern and had more of a darker complexion, and Native Americans, they are more darker complected versus the Europeans that come over afterwards too. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm just following along. So that kind of explains a lot, because I'll be honest, there is just so much misinformation that I honestly thought that the book that I used was like, oh yeah, this is awesome, because this is just, you know, going to explain so much. But, you know, in comparison to what I read versus your history and everything that you're telling me, I can see where those inconsistencies were, and the plates and all of that was just, that was something that I was struggling to grapple with, of, so where did these plates come from? Why were they there? Where did, you know, who are all of these people that would have done it? Because the way the book made it sound, and the way some other people have made it sound, in regards to rumors and talks, is that they just magically appeared. and it sounds like there's a much deeper history with it than the way that it's been, I guess, explained to the wider audience. So
yeah, definitely.
I appreciate you coming on and talking with me, because this definitely clears up a lot of misunderstanding that I had in regards to that video. And if people want, they can go back and watch the video and then listen to this one, so that they can kind of get a better grasp of the inconsistencies there, because there's a lot. But I guess we can end it now. That kind of explained everything, and we will have this podcast out. It'll be a bit. We're recording on May 13th, but we've got another 6-part series that's ahead of us, and then we've got a couple other episodes. So it'll come out eventually, and we'll probably put the video on YouTube, and the audio we'll have on our normal platform. And if you want, if you're doing any other special projects, feel free to you know, call them out. And other than that, we can go ahead and end the podcast here.
I think I'm good.
All right. Thanks for joining.
All right.
And at that point, I would cut. Yeah. All right. I love the joy of being able to go back and edit. And because when I do podcasts on my own, I tend to ramble really, really bad.
I noticed that a little bit.
Yeah.
And
so, like, if you go back to the beginning of the podcast, it's like really bad, and then it slowly starts to get more.
Yeah.
But I'm still learning. This is like the first real podcast that I've done, and just trying to learn what I need to change. And I listen to the podcast and I say so way too much. And I'm trying to refocus that and not do it just because it drives me crazy. But I'm learning and it'll get better. But I appreciate you coming on, and I guess I can let you go unless you have any questions for me.
I just wanted to say thanks because I've like always wanted to be on a podcast, but like I wouldn't know what to talk about if I were just to sit one of myself. So it's just nice to be sort of like just a guest on a podcast. So.
Yeah. And honestly, you're welcome to come back, because like if you ever want to talk about your personal journey, you can do that. Or if there's like a particular topic that you are interested in, I'd totally be up for having you back, just like a guest spot or whatever, because I had a lot of fun. I'm a huge like history buff in the sense of learning context and where stuff came from and where ideas came from. Yeah. And I feel like having another voice, because a lot of the topics I cover on the podcast could be considered, I guess, non-denominational style, versus having people from different denominations would be really, really cool, because you can get different viewpoints, and it's okay if both parties don't completely agree, but being able to have that discussion to understand and have that representation for other people, I think would be important, because I know there's probably several LGBTQ plus people that are in the Mormon faith.
There's actually not.
Oh, really?
Not really. I am one of three that I know in person.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Probably online, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, actually, they were actually in my, before all this quarantine and stuff.
Yeah, man.
One of them, he's actually in my congregation, mm-hmm. with his family. And he's like in high school though, I think. Mm-hmm. And he's transgender. And then the other one, she was also in my congregation, and she's closer to my age, but she moved out of her parents' house and is living in Oregon, but I'm still in pretty good contact with her.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know how much she practices nowadays, but, mm-hmm. yeah.
I'd say it's hard. Well, I don't know your particular church, but I've heard people that are... there is a podcast, I think it's like Ex-Mormon or something like that. I don't remember what it's called, but they talk about how they were gay or whatever in the Mormon church and how it was just really, really bad. They would try to go through the conversion therapy. They would kind of just every horror story that any other Christian denomination has that's super, super homophobic. They got kicked out of their home. They were considered sinner, you know, just all this horrible things that happened. And I don't remember if you mentioned that your church, you don't really know how they would act. Was that you that mentioned that, or?
I don't remember if I did.
Is your church okay, or is it more of just a don't ask, don't tell kind of situation?
It's kind of a don't ask, don't tell, okay, because yeah. I found out, so... The girl I know that I'm friends with, I only found out that she was transgender because her mom and my mom are really good friends, and mm-hmm. Her mom told my mom, and my mom was just like, "Hey, just so you know," and I'm just like, and this was even before I even knew I was asexual, which happened like just a few years ago, but I was just like, okay, it doesn't matter.
Thanks,
to me,
I guess.
She's still my friend.
Wow.
But like I honestly really I've only really come out to like a very few select people, because it's just like that sort of stigma people have, you
know? Yeah,
it's just like it's hard.
I wonder if they would react better given your asexual status versus...
Yeah, well, the thing is, when I told my parents that I was asexual, they were just like, oh, yeah, that's totally fine. We don't really care.
We don't care, whatever.
Yeah. That much. But it's just like... because it's just like, oh, I guess we don't have to worry that you're gonna...
go off and do
have
stuff
outside of marriage or something. And I'm just, and it's just like,
it's like, I guess it's almost like the celibate thing in a lot of churches. They say that gay people should be celibate. I would imagine they would probably have more issues with the non-binary aspect of things.
They definitely do. Yeah, they definitely do. Yeah, I've been trying to talk with my mom about it, but just because of who she is, she's very logical, I guess is the best way to put it. To, like,
everything's black and white.
Yeah, she can understand how someone might be being trans, but she doesn't fully understand completely, because to her, if you're born a certain way, then you are that, but she understands that sometimes things can be different for people, but with her, it's just there's male and there's female and there's there's not really any intersection between them.
I wonder what she would think about actual intersex people.
Yeah, that's part of the thing that's just I wish I could expose her to that, but I don't want to know. I'm scared of how she might take it.
It's there's literal biological, you can be I want you to Google something for me.
Yeah.
It's hard, especially having parents. My parents, I don't have anything to do with my dad, but my family, my biological family, they are completely accepting. Nobody cares. My grandmother, even my great grandma, she found out I was transitioning a few years ago after I was already on hormones and stuff. Just because I didn't know what she would do. Cause when you think of a great grandma, you think, oh, they're in a different time period. They may not understand. And she was more hurt that I just didn't tell her. And she recently called me and she was like, yeah, I watched, I think her name is Jasmine. She's the young girl who transitioned to a girl super young.
Four or five.
Yeah, that one. And she was like, yeah, I watched and she had her, and she used the right pronouns the whole time. She's like, yeah, she had her surgery and she's doing well. She's so pretty. She kept saying that.
I've wanted to watch that, but at the same time, it's just I don't want other people to know that I watch it because there's so much, there's so much of a bubble area I live in that
you'd have to
I
watch
wouldn't have
it.
Anyone to talk to with about it.
You can totally on Discord. I'm sure that people would love to watch it. I think that would be something cool for Chris and I to watch. Just because.
It's the opposite situation for you guys.
It is a complete, but at the same time, having that representation of just somebody trans period is really cool. There's not a lot of focus on trans men as much, and I don't know why, but I mean there's Jazz Bono or Bono, however you say it, but that's not in our generation, I guess, and he transitioned so publicly, which is cool, but there just isn't that, I guess. I watch more YouTubers because that you get that personal aspect of it and you get to see their process, but I think it would be really cool to have something on TLC or something like that to where it's more of a public showcase of it. And I don't know if it's that trans men are less likely to be as open about it or what it is, but I would like to see more trans men displayed alongside. I would like to see both representations.
I need some representation here though.
Right. that is another thing. There's just not a lot of non-binary stuff either. I have a friend, they're in, oh Lord, what is the name? They're out. I don't know if you're familiar with Tennessee, but Knoxville is about 2 hours away from us. So they're in Maryville, I think. And
I'm a little bit familiar.
Okay, cool. And they are they're a librarian, and they actually transitioned from female to non-binary, but they actually take hormones and pass as male. But they are non-binary and use they/them pronouns and all that. But that was like the first non-binary person that I knew. Everybody else, their partner is a trans guy, and he was actually the best man at Chris and I's wedding. And so I just, the understanding of non-binary early on, I had no clue. I was like, oh, so this is a thing. And it was really hard to grasp because I had never experienced feeling that kind of outside the box kind of feeling, and outside the binary. And so I just sat down and they kind of explained their life and how they feel. And it helped me to grasp that concept. And now after knowing a person who's non-binary, it feels like I just meet more and more people that are non-binary, or at least maybe my mind's open to it. There's actually a person in our church that's non-binary. I think two people possibly. Two people. And then one person that's kind of in the process of figuring out their gender. So we actually have a lot of trans umbrella people in our church, surprisingly, especially for a Pentecostal church.